So we'll just do a little bit about kosher, some basics about what kosher means. So people have a misconception about what kosher means. If you ask the average person on the street, what is kosher? So the average answer is, the rabbi blesses the food. If the rabbi blesses the food, it's kosher. So I say to them, yeah? You mean if I bless the pig so the pig becomes kosher? That'd be a great trick. So I say it has nothing to do with blessings. I say it is true. Before one eats food, one has to make a blessing to get permission, because it says the world belongs to God and it says the world belongs to man. So which one is it? Does it belong to God or belong to us? So the rabbis say, it's no difficulty. One is before you make a blessing, one is after you make a blessing. Before you make a blessing, everything belongs to God. After you make the blessing, it belongs to you. God gave it to you and now you could eat it. So we make blessings all the time. In fact, King David said you should make 100 blessings a day. But it has nothing to do with kosher. It has to do with stealing. It's like if you go into a candy store and take the chocolate bar and don't pay for it, you're stealing from the candy man. If you take the food and don't make a blessing, you're stealing from God. So if you pay for the chocolate, but you don't make a blessing, so you're not stealing from the candy man, you're stealing from God. So we always believe in blessings, but that's nothing to do with kosher. Kosher has to do with what is the nature of the animal. So the Torah tells us, the Torah gives us kosher signs. So for an animal, it has to have split hooves and chew its cud. In other words, it regurgitates. It has like many stomachs, and so it has split hooves and you need those two qualities in it. So if it has those two qualities, so then it's kosher. If it doesn't have, if it only has one of those qualities, like the pig or none, it's not. There's nothing to talk about. If it doesn't have those two kosher signs, that split hooves and chew its cud, then it's end of discussion. Now, if it does, it's a long process. Okay, so now you have to go slaughter the animal properly. We want to kill it quickly so it doesn't suffer. So that's what we want to do. But in terms of that, and as you know from the butcher, we just walk into Fortino's, the butcher shop, and we get kosher. But there's a whole long process. You got to slaughter it, salt it. That's why kosher meat's a little saltier than regular meat, because you put a lot of salt on to get the blood out, etc. So the two kosher, so for an animal, it needs a kosher sign, and then there's a whole long process. What is a kosher fish? So a kosher fish is fins and scales. If it has fins and scales, it's good, like salmon, tuna, halibut, whatever bunch of fish. If it doesn't have fins and scales, there's nothing to do. But it's a lot easier to find kosher fish. In other words, if you have a kosher animal, there's a whole long process from the time the animal's here to it gets to our plates. There's a lot of things you have to do. With the fish, you could go fishing. If you like fishing, you go into the lake, you catch a salmon, you could just, that's it, take off that and you go cook it and it's kosher. It's a lot easier process to do. You just have to make sure it has fins. And we have a tradition that the all pink fish are kosher. Basically, salmon and trout are the only two reddish fish. So we know the kosher. There's some issues now. People are putting different dyes into fish to try to make it look pink. So those are more complicated discussions, not for now. But the bottom line is fins and scales. You're in. Mm-hmm. If you don't have fins and scales, it's not kosher. So for an animal, it's split hooves and chew its cud. Mm-hmm. For fish, it's fins and scales. And what about birds? So birds, the Torah doesn't tell me what signs on the birds. It gives me a list of birds. I think in the Torah it says, these 24 birds are not kosher. And that's it. But doesn't, so the problem is, we don't know the names of the birds then to the names of the birds now. Like, I'm not a bird expert. No one. So therefore, the Talmud, the oral law, goes into detail in terms of different signs. So we have a tradition, so we know animals that kill, animals that do, that eat on the bottom. So different criteria. So we know, so different, you know, chickens are good and that type of thing. So that's the tradition we have, which birds are good, which ones aren't good. And we, you know, you are what you eat. So birds of prey aren't kosher and that type of thing. So those are the three categories. Animals chew its cud and split hooves, fins and scales for fish, and it's 24. So that's the basic thing about kosher. Another basic thing about kosher is the Bible tells us in three places you can't have milk and meat together. And we learn out why three, to say it once. Why do you have to tell me three times? So we learn out three things. One is I can't cook milk and meat together. Mm-hmm. Two, I can't eat milk and meat that was cooked together. And three, I can't get any benefit from it. In other words, if I have a dog, I can't feed the dog something, milk and meat that were cooked together. Not because the dog doesn't have to keep kosher, but I'm getting benefit. If it's my dog, and the dog, or cat, or whatever animal you have, so I could give the animal non-kosher, that's okay. But I can't give them milk and meat is stricter. Milk and meat is not only prohibited to eat, but I can't get benefit. Benefit means if someone, so therefore, and there was a big they found, it was in New York about 20 years ago, in one of the kosher stores, it was a mistake, but they found in the cat food, or they found it was milk and meat, so they had to take it out. They were, you know, so, but not, the animals, the dog can eat whatever they want. We just can't feed the dogs. So those are the three things. And chicken and milk, we just say because chicken look like meat, so therefore, rabbinically, we don't have, we treat, really, chicken is like fish. It's really parav from a Torah level, biblical level. But we, since chicken looked more like meat, so people mix them up. And if I see the, if you're allowed to have chicken and milk, then they're going to have meat and milk. So therefore, for our purposes, we treat chicken like meat. We don't eat it. We treat it as meat, not parav. That's why always a joke I say, you know, when I'm crossing the border, and I have chicken, so they ask me, do you have meat? I say, what do you mean? Biblical meat or like rabbinic meat? No. I don't tell, that's what I think. I don't tell them. They usually don't ask me. But so that's how it goes. So therefore, for our purposes, we treat chicken like meat. But fundamentally it really starts off so the biblical prohibition is only, let's say, ironically, if you go to McDonald's and you have a Big Mac, do they have the cheese on a Big Mac? I don't know. But either way, it's a Big Mac. So really, it's non-kosher meat with cheese. So that's probably not even as... That's probably not... To be real, milk and meat together, it has to be kosher meat and kosher milk. It has to be from a kosher animal. Mm-hmm. And a, so interesting, at one point, it's a sad thing, but the worst place to eat in McDonald's was Jerusalem. Because it wasn't kosher. Unfortunately, they have a lot of non-kosher restaurants in Israel. You know, many people are. It's a secular state. It's not a religious state. So the problem was, that was the worst thing you could do, because it's kosher animal and kosher milk, the mixing together. That's the real biblical prohibition. We can't eat this Big Mac either, but I'm saying is, but that might only be rabbinical, but I'm saying either way, that'd be biblical.
Yeah,
it'll be biblical for, yeah. Now, if you have a kosher McDonald's, it's okay. It'll be prohibited for different reasons, mm-hmm. but it won't be, it'll be biblical for Neveh or non-kosher, but either way. So it says, so you can't cook meat and milk, you can't eat it, you can't get benefit. What's the reason for the prohibition? Why can't I mix meat and milk? Two things are kosher. The meat's kosher, the milk's kosher. Why can't I have them together? So on the simple level, well, everything the Torah says we can't do it, and they give different reasons. But one of the reasons given is because meat represents death, because you're slaughtering the animal. Milk represents life. In Judaism, we don't want to mix the two. We see the dangers of other religions, that when religious people get involved in life and death issues, that's why you have so many suicide bombers today. In Judaism, we like a separation, so to speak, of church and state. Mm-hmm. The religious leaders were one place. The political leaders, you don't want the same people, political leaders and religious leaders, in terms of that. So therefore, milk, so we, like for instance, I'll give you an example. A Kohen, let's say, I happen to be a Levite. So there, for men, either you could be a Kohen, they get called up for the first, a Levite and a regular Israel. So when it comes to who's Jewish, so obviously we know the mother is the most important. Mm-hmm. If you come out of a Jewish mommy, you are Jewish no matter what. There are two ways to become Jewish. Either, as they say, a Jew by birth, if you come out of a Jewish mommy, or a Jew by choice, meaning you convert. Mm-hmm. So either those are the two ways you become. But if your mother is not Jewish, don't you have to convert. So, and therefore, if you have a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, you're not Jewish. However, let's assume you marry a Jewish man, marries a Jewish woman. So whether you're a Kohen, Levi, or Israel, that depends on your father. So the father depends on your yichus, so to speak. Your genealogy goes by your father. Mm-hmm. But if you're Jewish, if you don't have a Jewish mother, discussion over. If you have a Jewish mother, okay, then let's find out about your father. Again, if you have a non-Jewish father, then you're going to be just to Israel. But if you have a Jewish father, then you have to find out. That's the old joke, they say. A person came to the rabbi and said he wanted to be a Kohen. He wanted to be a priest. So the rabbi said, sorry, I can't make you a priest. So, okay, he didn't know. So he came. Okay, how about if I'll make a $500 donation to the shul. Now could I become a priest? He said, no, I can't make you. Okay, $10,000. He said, no, I can't make you. And by the way, why do you want to become a priest so much? He says, because my father was a priest, his father was a, in other words, he didn't realize he was a Kohen already, because it's automatic. if your father, either you are or you're not. I can't, I'm a Levite, that's it. I don't have a choice. My father was a Levite, his father, I'm a Levite. There's nothing to talk about, either you are or you're not. So therefore, there's privileges to being a priest, a Kohen, and there's responsibilities. So one of the responsibilities is, you can't go into a cemetery. You can't be in the same room as a dead body if you're a priest, if you're a Kohen. Of course, let me point out that for your seven close relatives, mommy, daddy, your spouse, brother, sister, daughter, son, the seven close relatives, you can. In fact, not only can you, you have to. You have to, it's your obligation to bury them. But barring the seven relatives, if you're a Kohen, you can't go to a cemetery. So why? So what's one of the things we don't want the Kohanim, the religious leaders of life, we don't want them mixed in with death issues. We want a separation of life. So too, milk and meat. Milk is life, meat is death. That's one of the reasons, you know, we don't want to, this, you know, that's one of the better reasons, you know, it's easy to understand more. Mm-hmm. The bottom line, it comes down to, why do you have to keep kosher? Because God said so. It says in the Torah, because you are a holy nation, you have to keep kosher. Mm-hmm. That's it. So if somebody asks, why do I have to eat kosher? Because the Torah says we're a holy nation, we have to. It doesn't explain. The commentators try to give different, like always, when we try to understand, because the more you understand something, the easier it is to keep it. So when you're doing it, you do it because God said so. But when I'm studying it, this, why am I keeping kosher? Because God says I have to. Okay, but now let me understand why I'm keeping kosher. It's a better chance I'll keep kosher if I understand what I'm doing. So therefore, the people, you know, people give different reasons. So let's say, for instance, let's say part of keeping kosher, so obviously we're holy and we have to keep it, but to try to understand it more, so on one level, there's a level of, like all mitzvahs, self-control, that basically humans are different than animals. What do animals do? They act like animals. You just take what you grab. So too, I'm hungry to eat, okay, let me make a blessing first. I can't just take the food and throw it in my mouth. Okay, thank you. Or anything, you know, we make blessings, we pray, that it's Judaism is all about self-control. And kosher is what, I can't just go into any store, you know, I know you go on the road, it's easier, I can't just go into any pizza shop, I have to come prepared. I know my kosher stuff, I know where I get my kosher milkshakes and friendlies and that, but yet when you bring food on the road, I'm used, see, for me, it's not a challenge for me. Because I'm saying now it's not, because I was brought up that way. It doesn't really tempt, like, it's not when I walk by McDonald's, I say, oh, I wish I could go in there. Like, first of all, McDonald's probably isn't a good example because the food's probably the only, I'm just saying, I guess in theory, like, someone told me, like, if they have, maybe certain, like, I forgot this place, they're supposed to have, like, good pork chops, I don't know. But I'm saying, I forget the name of the place. Either way, I'm saying I was brought up on kosher, so non-kosher doesn't really tempt me. So it's not like I walk by. If I used to eat there, now I don't. So I'll have to take, like I told my wife at dinner, she took out some chocolate Danish. So I don't need to resist. I didn't want any. She brought out, I didn't like. So it wasn't like, oh, I really want it, but I'm holding. Like, if you don't like something, it's easy to resist. I'm just saying is, if it's something I want, like, not having the chicken wings at Chalas Shudas, that was tempting. Because I wanted, I just didn't want to have them then, because it was late, but those I really wanted to eat. So, if something you want, you hold back. So, it's all about self-control. So, I'll give you, for instance, like, there was a study, nothing to do with Jewish. I think it was Stanford University. In California, they did I think they called it the marshmallow test, but you could change marshmallow to anything else. It could be chocolate, it could be Reese's Pieces, any whatever your favorite food is, whatever your favorite dessert is, you could just plug it in. But what was the marshmallow test? That basically they put, I think it happened to be a test with kids, 9, 10 years old, but it could be with 25-year-old kids, it wouldn't make a difference. But the test was with kids, young kids, and they came in, okay, it was a double-sized mirror, so they didn't know you could see them, but they thought they were alone, but you could actually look in and watch. And they said, here's a marshmallow, and they said, we're giving you 5 minutes. If you don't eat the marshmallow, we'll give you 2 marshmallows, or we'll give you 3, whatever, you know, whatever they want, don't do it. And maybe they said 20, you know, making up the numbers, whether it was 5 minutes, 10 or 15, and how many they'd give you. But the point being is they said, don't have it to a certain amount of time. And then if you do, we'll reward you with an extra prize. Okay. So they're watching. The one guy goes in, he's sitting there 1 minute. He's really looking at it. And finally, like you see, like he licks the bottom of the marshmallow. He puts it back down. He starts picking, you know. And you have to, other ones just can't control it. They walk in, they just eat it. So, and other ones, they show self-control and they get their package. What did the Stanford study, what did it show? They followed these people for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And there was it wasn't coincidental. The ones who showed self-control were the successful people. They went on to become successful businessmen, professors, teachers, doctors, lawyers, and the ones who couldn't control themselves didn't, because nothing to do with Judaism. If a person doesn't have self-control, If you give in to every impulse and you are like an animal, you're not going to be successful in life. Part of life is you have to realize you got to sacrifice. You go to school, you put in your time, you work hard so you could have things. You know, we live in the entitlement generation, so I can't speak to people about that. They think they should get everything without working. But I'm saying is, but it's all about the work ethic, doing things is and showing self-control. And that's the real reward because you feel much better. You don't feel good after, you know, after you indulge, you don't feel good. You feel sick afterwards, right? It's the self-control that you feel good about. And that's one of the aspects of kosher, like the Stanford study, which wasn't a Jew. But part of kosher, like everything else in life, is you can't have everything when you want and when you want it. It's part of, we just learned Parshas Bereishis. We started Genesis this week. That was the sin of Adam and Eve. We have a tradition that it was, that the tree, they were going to be permitted to, God said for the next, whatever, 24 hours, you can't eat from the tree of knowledge. And one of the traditions is, if they would have waited, then God would have said you could have it. So what was their mistake? That they couldn't show any self-control. It, as the Torah says, it looked so good, it resisted, and then, you know, Adam blamed Eve, Eve blamed the serpent, everyone blamed each other, which is, you know, no one took personal responsibility. So, but the point being is, they showed a lack of self-control. And in fact, there's an interesting custom. We just celebrated the holiday of Sukkot. We had the lulav and esrog, the four species. So according to one tradition, the esrog was the tree of knowledge. That Adam and Eve, the esrog, you know, the one that looks like a lemon. Yeah. You know, the difference is, I tell people, if you go to Metro, you can get it 3 for $1. But an esrog costs $50 and higher. So, I don't know if you saw the movie Ushpizin. It's a fun movie to watch. You could probably get it now in the stores. It's about someone, it's an interesting story about this Hasidic family in Israel, very poor, had no money. And he got 1,000 shkolim and he took the money, he spent it on this beautiful esrog. And then, you know, the wife wasn't too happy because they had no food. And then, you know, different. So either way, so we have a tradition. The esrog was that tree. So there's a tradition. After Sukkot is over, pregnant women who are pregnant, take a bite or make it into jam. They eat from the esrog. Why? Because what do they say? They say, God, I know Eve was in heaven. No, she wasn't in heaven. Eve was in the Garden of Eden. And she couldn't wait. You told her if she would have waited 24 hours, you didn't actually tell her that, but if she would have waited 24 hours, she could have had it. I'm not like Eve. The whole Yontif, 7 days, I'm waiting, I'm looking at this beautiful esrog. I can't wait to eat it. But I wait to after Sukkot. And therefore, we have a tradition. The Torah, it says in the Genesis, because of Eve's sin, women have the pain of childbirth. So God, take it easy on me, because if I was there, I went to eat, and I would have been easy. So that's the tradition, to take eat from the esrog after Sukkot, so a woman should have an easy childbirth. But that's what it's. But we see self-control. That's about everything: making brachas, getting up in the morning, first praying in the morning. You know, all the commandments. All, you know, on the lowest common denominator, the first step is self-control. Then that's not enough. We have to live a life of sanctity also, and we do other things, but it's all on a simple level. That's also kosher has a lot to do with, we're a holy nation. Kosher is, it's like, same way, if you ate poison, you get sick, you get food poisoning, you eat non-kosher. Now, if you're a non-Jewish, it's not an issue, you're allowed to. But if you're Jewish and you eat non-kosher, it poisons your soul. And the many stories where people who, you become not, many of the children, the kids went off the way because they had non-kosher in their home. They say a story with one of the great rabbis, I think it was Maimonides. He was talking to this rabbi in Morocco, wherever it was. They used to have a correspondence. Mm-hmm. So some reason, the Rambam stopped writing back to him. So the rabbi wrote back. He said, are you upset at me? Did I do something? Like, how... So the Rambam said, I see already By the way you're writing stuff, I see something's wrong. He said, he wrote him five words. Go and check the butchers in your town. In other words, something's wrong. You're reading non-kosher. Maybe the butchers are doing something wrong. In other words, because on a spiritual level, it's basically it's spiritual poison. That's what it basically is. Physical poison we feel right away. Spiritual poison, it has the impact is slow, and it has a very, you know, it's what they call, it's called timtum havleim. You can't have, you don't eat non-kosher because it's going to spiritually dim you. And each, you know, each time, you don't realize, a lot of things in life, you know, you don't realize 1 pound at a time, but you wake up, what? I put on 30 pounds, how did it happen? You know, or whatever, same thing, you wake up, how did I end up with the cheeseburgers or this, you know, it doesn't start off with the big things, it's the little things first, this isn't important, this and that, and then you break the rabbinic laws and you end up, you know, with the cheeseburgers and that. So those are, so to summarize, this is some general kosher we have. The kosher animals is chew its cud and split hooves. Then we have the fish, skins and fins and scales. The birds, the 24 the Torah says not to. And then we just know from all the other ones are kosher. We separate milk and meat. We can't cook it together. We can't get benefit together. We can't eat it. And on a simple level, of course, because we're holy, we can't have milk and meat. But as we said, milk represents life. Meat represents death. We have to keep a separation. Mm-hmm. Like Kohan and priests can't go to a cemetery. It's very dangerous to have religious leaders. In fact, if you look in the five books of Moses, you'll find very little about the next world. We believe in Judaism, we'll get into it, we believe the next world's the main world. Whatever, you know, what we do in this world will determine whether we're going to get box seats or sit up in the nosebleed section, you know, in the BC with the 30. Some people had good seats somewhere in the upper decks. We can, you know, we control what we do in this world, we'll control that. But so they point out that why didn't the Torah, if the most important world is next world, not this world, why did the Torah spend so little time of two virgins up in heaven, or you're going to get all your rewards? So people are going to negate this world, and they'll say, okay, why am I doing here? Let me go straight up. And Judaism says, no, this is world. This is the main world we have to live in, and what we do here, that's why the Torah doesn't talk about the next world. The oral does, but because if you overemphasize the next world, you negate this world. And this is the world God gave us to live in, and that's the problem. That's why we have separation of life and death. And that's why we explain life and death, milk and meat, and the purpose of kosher is we're a holy nation. But of course, self-control, like the marshmallow test, the Stanford study, and life's all about self-control, the people are going to be successful in life. To be a successful businessman, you have to be self-control. To be a successful Jew, you have to show a lot of self-control as well, even more. There's so many things, you know, that so many more things that are, you know, are prohibited to us, etc. Any questions, comments, or alternative speeches?